This is HMM correspondent Alexis Goldsmith, and we are talking with Jane Williams, chair of the Sierra Club National Clean Air Team. Sierra Club joined with Earth Justice and other community groups to file a lawsuit on Thursday, February 20th, over the Department of Defense shipping firefighting foam to be burnt at various incinerators across the country, including the Norlite facility in Cohoes. Jane, could you please tell us who the plaintiffs in this case are and why are you suing the Department of Defense and these various incinerators?
Okay, so the plaintiffs are the Sierra Club, United Congregations of Metro East, which has community members that live near the Sage incinerator in Illinois. Also, Save Our County, which has members that live under the smokestack of the Heritage Incinerator in East Liverpool, Ohio. And then Community Empower and Development, whose community members live under the smokestack of the Veolia Incinerator in Port Arthur, Texas. And then the Sierra Club has a number of its own members that live near the incinerator in Deer Park, Texas, Arkadelphia, Arkansas, El Dorado, Arkansas, and in Grafton, Ohio, near the Ross incinerator. So those are the parties and where the smokestacks are, and of course then also the Norlite facility, which you are most interested in New York. So we, about a year ago, inquired as to what the DOD was planning to do with the AFFF aqueous film-forming foam fire suppressant that it had stockpiled for a number of years. And we found out that they were planning on burning it. So we did a lot of investigation and found these community groups that cared about these incinerators and other Sierra Club members that lived near these incinerators. And we did a Freedom of Information Act request for the Department of Defense so that we could learn where they were actually sending the waste to. Well, the Department of Defense took a long time to get back to us. And when they finally did get back to us just very recently is when the Norlite facility was not on the original list of facilities that were approved by the Defense Logistics Agency, the contracting agency for the Department of Defense. It was only when we received the manifest information back from the DOD that we discovered that Norlite, which is owned by Trade-A-Bee, and some of the original DOD contracts were granted to Trade-A-Bee to send waste to Cohoes, New York.
The case challenges the U.S. Department of Defense failure to conduct any environmental review and to comply with applicable environmental requirements before approving the incineration of millions of gallons of toxic firefighting foam, PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, we actually asked the Department of Defense for information on their environmental analysis under the National Environmental Policy Act. And they responded back to our information request saying that they had not done such an analysis.
So they green-lighted the incineration of these toxic PFAS forever chemicals without any environmental review.
Precisely.
How does this violate the National Environmental Policy Act and the National Defense Authorization Act?
So the National Environmental Policy Act applies to decisions made by the Department of Defense. And what the National Environmental Policy Act requires is that you take a look at the impact of your decision on the environment and you look at alternatives to whatever activity you're proposing. So that's what NEPA does. They completely did not comply with NEPA at all. Now, the National Defense Authorization Act amendments that were passed in December of 2019 and signed by President Trump opine and give direction to DOD on the incineration of these PFAS chemicals. And DOD sought to constrain the incineration of the chemicals to temperatures at incinerators that DOD would know completely destroyed the chemicals. The Department of Defense has done no analysis, to our knowledge, of whether the incinerators are even destroying the chemicals at all, much less at what percentage, what destruction removal efficiency they are. And there's also a clause in the National Defense Authorization Act that directs the Department of Defense to protect environmental justice and our most vulnerable communities, which clearly the Norlite incinerator being right across the street from a low-income housing project would fit that bill, would fit into that. And the Department of Defense has failed to even analyze if where it is sending its waste to has an impact on a vulnerable community, and if it does, how it would reduce that impact.
Do we have any idea of just how much firefighting foam and PFAS the Department of Defense intends to burn?
Millions of pounds.
And your case explicitly states that this really doesn't make sense because firefighting foam is designed to not burn, and when it does burn, it releases the PFAS into the air along with other toxic chemicals. Can you explain what the hazards of PFAS in the air are and what some of the other chemicals that might be released?
PFAS-type chemicals are very resistant to heat. It's precisely the reason they were manufactured, because they resist breaking down under heat. And so they don't really burn. They are blown out of the stack. Now, from the evidence that we have from the Chemours facility in Fayetteville, where some of these chemicals were originally created, when chemical manufacturing facilities emit these chemicals into the air, they actually come down through a process known as wet deposition or dry deposition and go onto the soil. And once they hit that soil, they like water. They are lipophilic. They're water-loving. So they quickly want to be with water. So they will either end up in surface waters or they will actually dive through the ground and end up in drinking water. So at the Fayetteville plant in North Carolina, groundwater drinking wells within many miles of the plant have been contaminated because of airborne deposition from that facility's emissions. So we're very concerned that you're just blowing these chemicals out of smokestack and that you're going to end up with this depositional problem and end up contaminating drinking water resources in the impacted communities.
And once the environment, the air, the soil, and the water is contaminated with these chemicals, can anything be done to clean them up?
Well, you know, then you would have to, you know, the irony is that these chemicals are in a 55-gallon drum someplace now, say in a fire station or, you know, at a military base, and they're isolated from the environment. The irony is we're, like, trucking them, you know, miles and miles and miles across the United States to a facility like Norlite and then blowing them out of smokestack and then dispersing them all over the environment. And once you've done that, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult to round up all those molecules again and very expensive. Once the molecules are rounded up, whether it's in water filters or in contaminated soils, we do have some ideas on how to actually destroy them as opposed to just disperse them, which is what's happening now. And that's mainly through our nation's efforts to destroy the chemical weapons stockpile. When we signed on to an international treaty about 15 years ago to destroy our nation's chemical weapons stockpiles, we actually created new technologies to destroy those stockpiles. And some of the chemical warfare agents have a cyanide fluorine bond that is very similar to the carbon fluorine bond that are in PFAS chemicals. And we are hopeful that if DOD would actually do the analysis that NEPA would have required, that they would have been able to identify that these newer cutting edge technologies would be much better at actually destroying the chemicals instead of just releasing them into the environment.
We're speaking with Jane Williams, chair of the Sierra Club National Clean Air Team. Jane, you were just mentioning how the Department of Defense decided to ignore the National Environmental Protection Act and burn PFAS chemicals instead of looking into other ways of disposing of them. Why do you think they decided to do this?
Well, I think that these chemicals are extraordinarily toxic and very dangerous, and they're sort of a hot potato to keep hanging on to them. And I would imagine that incineration was just the quickest way to pass on the hot potato.
And can we bring it back to the Norlite facility here in Cohoes? Can you explain what the Norlite facility is for our listeners that don't know?
The Norlite facility is actually not a hazardous waste incinerator. It is a lightweight aggregate kiln. And what it does under normal circumstances is it heats materials that it's taken out of the ground and fires them in a kiln and makes building materials out of them. That facility was never designed to be a hazardous waste incinerator, nor is it retrofitted with the types of pollution control devices that would have made it, you know, significantly reduce its hazardous emissions into the surrounding communities. It's one of only two lightweight aggregate kilns in the country that has permission from the host state to burn hazardous waste chemicals.
How is it, if it wasn't designed to burn hazardous waste, that they are allowed to burn hazardous waste?
Well, because your state has allowed it.
And why was Norlite facility located on Saratoga Street in Cohoes selected to burn the PFAS chemicals?
Well, I don't know how it ended up on the Defense Logistics Agency's list of approved facilities. It is owned by Tre2Bee, and Tre2Bee is one of the contractors that DOD hired to get rid of the AFFF on the Eastern Seaboard. So I imagine that Norlite was chosen because it's a subsidiary of that original contractor.
Now that Sierra Club has filed a lawsuit on behalf of these various groups and locations across the country, what is the short-term, midterm, and long-term goal of this lawsuit?
In the short term, we would like to motivate DOD to end its shipments across the country, all across the country, to hazardous waste incinerators. In the medium term, we would like to be able to work with DOD to actually identify an alternative treatment technology that would not just disperse the chemicals, but would actually destroy them. That would be the midterm. And in the long term, we would like to see these chemicals cease being used, because they're obviously incredibly dangerous and very persistent, and they are bioconcentrating up the food chain and ending up in the next generation. So I think that the long-term goal is to, you know, seek more effective and less environmentally toxic fire suppressants for use within the military with the DOD.
So you said that per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, the PFAS, they're bioconcentrating. What does that mean?
They are going up the food chain so that they concentrate in organisms and animals at the top of the food chain. So unfortunately, one of the most exposed, the worst exposure scenarios is for a nursing infant, because these chemicals will be found in cord blood and breast milk. So it's pretty widely known that virtually every child that's born in the world now is born with a pre-existing body burden of these chemicals, because they're so persistent. They don't break down in the environment, just like they don't break down in a smokestack. And they bioconcentrate up the food chain. And unfortunately for us, a nursing infant is at the very top of that food chain.
And what sorts of health effects do they have?
These perfluorinated compounds are one of the most dangerous health effects that are occurring at the lowest levels. is actually they are suppressing the immune systems of children. They're also carcinogenic and, damage different organ systems. But the public health impact that's most alarming for such widespread contamination is the immune suppression in the next generation.
So for residents who live around the Norlite facility in Cohoes or who live downwind of it, like we do here in North Central Troy, is there any way to protect ourselves from these emissions? And is there any way to fight back and say we don't want these chemicals burned in our neighborhood?
Well, the state of New York has authorities. It has powers within its governmental architecture that it could ban the incineration of the chemicals throughout the state. And that would be the best way for people to protect themselves, because once you have spread these chemicals and released them in your environment, it's kind of like opening Pandora's box. They're extraordinarily difficult, if not impossible, to round back up and, to try to get a hold of, because you've dispersed them over such a wide area and because it's very expensive to like filter them out of water, or pick up contaminated soils, or stop eating contaminated fish. It's better to prevent the pollution in the first place. And luckily, the state of New York can do that. They can prohibit the importation of the chemicals for disposal into the state of New York, and ban their disposal either in landfills or through incineration.
And how would an everyday citizen go about trying to make that happen?
Well, from what I understand, you're not far from the state capitol. So it is in the state capitol that those kinds of decisions are made, both through local legislative action and through the action of your governor. Now, the governor, the administration of your state, has already existing authorities. They can do emergency rulemakings. They can use the imminent substantial endangerment provisions of the Clean Air Act and of the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. They have the ability, because your state has a delegated authority under those federal laws, to enact those kinds of things. I know that last year your state banned the use of training with firefighting foam, through an action of the legislature that was recently signed by Governor Cuomo. So I think there's many paths. Some could be enacted and engaged in the very short term. Some would take a little bit longer. But all of them could protect these local communities that are now essentially on the front lines of PFAS chemical exposure.
And Jane, if anybody wants to get in touch with Sierra Club or wants to participate in this lawsuit, is there a way that they can do that?
Well, the lawsuit has been filed, and it's not really something you can participate in, after it's filed. It was actually filed in the Northern California District, because that's where the Sierra Club's national office is. So it'd be difficult for people in New York to attend hearings in the court and things like that. However, the Atlantic chapter, which is the relevant chapter for New York chapter of the Sierra Club, would certainly, love to have people that wanted to get engaged in this. I think that NYPERG is also interested in either introducing legislation or pressuring the administration in your state to engage in emergency rulemaking. So both of those organizations have very strong, very powerful, very influential chapters in New York, both the Sierra Club and NYPERG.
Jane, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, and I look forward to hearing about how this lawsuit will play out.